Thank you very much indeed, John. That was magnificent. I have a question about the workings of the mind of both government ministers, from prime ministers down, and the journalists and editors who write those stories that you started off your talk with today. They're not unintelligent. They must know the facts as well as everybody in this room. They have families. They have children, some of them grandchildren.
Yeah.
I don't understand how their minds are working to either A, refuse to do what's necessary when they have the power and they're in government, or to promote pernicious news stories such as you started your talk with.
Yeah.
How do we communicate with minds like that?
I think there's a fantastic fear factor. I would say without, you know, my daughter is too much on social media and Twitter and the rest of it, and I'm not a conspiratory theorist at all, but I would add this. There are powerful lobbyists in the oil industry who, take for example the detail of the ULEZ proposal in London. Not all cars would be affected. Who would be affected most? The answer is van drivers. Which vans come down your road from which companies? DHL, Amazon? Who pay the worst wages to their workers and treat them the worst? And who lobbies in Parliament the hardest to keep that show on the road? And the answer lies in that economic, financial interest of which MPs and power is afraid.
There's a question from here.
Thank you very much for your talk. I always understood, because we have a Labour MP who's very good, as far as I know, seeing walking his dog in the park, local country park. But you can't write to another MP or minister because he just refers. I mean, there's all sorts of MPs from Rees-Mogg down I would like to write to about relevant things that irritate me. But he would just give it to Justin, and I certainly don't want Justin bothered by things like that.
I think that's become part of two things that I say. I mentioned MPs that are told, you know, you can't go over the boundary and do casework in the neighbouring MP's constituency. You can't visit it without telling them. It was a courtesy. You know, that my neighbouring MP was a Conservative. If I went to a school in his neighbourhood, I'd drop him a note and say, is it OK? I'm calling in the Catholic school in your neighbourhood. He might even come into mine and say, it's OK. The email business has changed all that, but so has the violence against MPs, to be fair. And two MPs have been murdered. And MPs are not allowed to do what I did, which was, we used to call it, I mean, I used to go around libraries every Saturday and community centres on the hour, and people could come to me with any old problems, really. And I didn't have a guard, I was there on my own and wrote notes and talked to people for 10, 15 minutes. They can't do that now. They have to fix appointments because of security. So it's pulled away the political representation from the people. And I think those to re-knit that is going to be a really difficult job of trust between the people and the public representatives. So rubbishing them all the time, and I didn't intend to do that, but to say that the good representatives will have to start to feel comfortable among the people they represent. There is no reason why you can't write to anybody, any public representative. The only massive question is whether you'll get a reply. My answer to getting a reply is this. There are tactics. I put on the board some ideas that came from an American. Again, he is an environmental campaigner, and it was some ideas for communication and campaigning that we could use. But my idea for campaigning with people that have power is to tie them down. I mean, I would never write to an MP now that wasn't someone I knew without putting at the bottom, and P.S., a copy of this has gone to the Daily Mail, the Radio Leeds, and a national newspaper, so I expect a reply within 7 days. And then, in other words, use the media against them to make them to recognise that they have to be accountable and transparent. And I think that is ways we can devise ways of the Gulliver job, tying them down to respond. Because to get the responses, it's a way in which there's a kind of a culture of, well, people, as I said, can moan on the radio, but don't come too close to asking real questions of us, because we manage the narrative. But we've to change that. The other thing is to say, I do think we need more creative imagination. And I know there's criticism of Stop the Oil and some of the struggles of, you know, the Stopping Extinction Rebellion. And I think we have to think of the... We've got a good organisation across the hall there in Pax Christi telling us how to do things non-violently, and that we should honour those traditions that are part of our tradition. There are ways of doing things that don't cross that line. So can we inject that into the kind of, if I said dramatic perhaps ideas, and the young people are full of them, creative ways of challenging that enormous power that's behind some of the status quo that we have to challenge, not least on this very difficult agenda of sustainability, the climate crisis, and making sure there's a planet for the youngsters in the future.
One more question, if anybody has it, right at the back there. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for your excellent talk. I wonder if you could give us a comment on the number of people who have been thrown out of the Labour Party because they say they're anti-Semitic. People like Ken Loach, the film director who's campaigned for years for poverty. Jewish Voices for Labour also chucked out because they're anti-Semitic. Can you comment, please?
I'm anxious not to speak for the Labour. I hold no role of office in the Labour Party. But I would say this, it's part of this panic, isn't it, of shutting down debate. I will declare an interest. I mean, I actually had the privilege of launching Ken Loach's film in Leeds after Daniel Blake. It was on the gig economy, and we were campaigning. I'm not convinced that he is anti-Semitic. I just state my case there. I think, though, there is... again, fear politics. In Justice and Peace in Leeds, we help the Palestinian Film Society every year show a film. We've managed to get it into the hall next to the cathedral, as if it's blessed by the cathedral, which is good. But every year, we have to be ultra careful of who we, not who we invite, but how we organise and present that conference so that we're not shut down. And it's a difficult one. That is one of the most difficult and contested things, because some people watch like hawks to, how should I put it, to attribute guilt by association. And I think it's very, very dangerous thinking. And the more fear dominates politics, including in the Labour Party, the more that's going to be a problem. So what we've got to look for, hope builds trust, but can we move to vision and hope? Is there no other possibility? I think there is, and encouragingly, young people are leading us there.
Just to say thank you very much to John. I mean, key points that I've just written down, personal rights and survival is more important than the common good at the moment. And challenge, we need more than ever to work the kind of things that Brian Davis is working for. It is as it was. And also that the guy... political populism didn't disappear with UKIP, and coming time and time again, long-term vision, listening, reflecting and acting, interpersonal relationships, seeing the other, listen to the other person's story, and the hope and the trust and the vision come from a more long-term thinking. And the fact that we must remind ourselves all the time, John mentioned, the Holy Spirit, the advocate. What is the Spirit calling us to do? What is the Spirit calling us to do as individuals, but more importantly, as people of faith, and people of faith who are committed to activism? And I'd just like to say to John, you know, building alliances outside the church is crucial. We have to recognise we don't have all the answers. There are many people who have the same concerns as we have, and we must work together with building hope and trust and vision for the future, and again, for the betterment of society, pleading the cause of the poor, and be catalysts for change as justice and peace activists, and not to give up. And remember, we have the support of each other. We're not on our own. We're not working as individuals, because we need each other. And love needs to be organised. So that's where we'll finish. I'd like to say thank you very much to John for sharing all his experience.